It's October 17th, 2013. This is the Hell Yeah Show. Hello and welcome to the Hell Yeah Show. I'm Al.
I'm Beatboxer Emery.
And we are bringing you best practices for fine living, advice on how to not let technology ruin your day. Emery.
At last, the nightmare is over.
Yeah, that's... Thank you for jogging my memory on where that came from.
Yeah. Well, I'm just glad, you know, the shutdown's finally over.
Yes. Yeah, the government is reopening, so we can finally visit the, time.gov again.
Yeah, and...
Yay, time.gov works.
Oh, I forgot to add one thing that I wanted to talk about on the show notes real quick.
Why does time.gov need Java?
Oh, well, that's so they can install the malware to mine Bitcoins.
Okay, anyway, yeah, NOAA.gov, are they up now? Yeah, they're up. Yeah, all sorts of great government websites coming back online. That's been the main highlight for me. So. Wow, wait, what's, you're frantically...
Yeah, it reminded me of something that I'll get to later.
All right.
But first, why did we miss last week?
We missed last week because I actually forget. Oh, because I was taking part in an Iron Chef competition.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Was it for fusion chili?
No, it was for beets.
Beets?
Yeah, you know, that drop in the beets.
All right, shut up.
No, it was the secret ingredient was beets.
And not tamako?
No, fortunately. Yeah, it was an event at work, a recruiting event where we brought some.
That's what it was. You told me it was a recruiting event. I don't think you told me that there was.
It
like
was an Iron Chef competition.
Yeah, that's a pretty big detail.
Yeah, yeah, it was pretty fun. We had to make three courses
out of beets.
Out of beets, yeah. Well, you know, involving beets. And we, you know, basically a salad, an appetizer, and a main course. You really, I mean, you. All the courses were supposed to basically feed a large number of people, but then also be able to produce a delicate dish for, you know, judgment. And you really gain an appreciation for what it takes to put together a large scale meal. I think we all basically produced flavorless food.
Iron Chef salt.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, you just don't. Yeah, on that scale, on the scale of, like, I'm producing a tray of this food, you just don't think about where is the flavor going to come from, you know?
Yeah, that's a little... beets, I guess... God, I don't even know if I've ever had a meal with beets that I enjoyed.
Yeah. I like them in a salad, you know, a nice beet salad. Sure.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, we're done.
Yeah. Okay, fine.
So, so that's why we didn't do one last week.
Yes.
But and then we were kind of trying to regroup a little bit. And I think we were going to see about getting together later in the week last week, but then I had a bit of a conflict because LL, the lady of the house, she had a conference that was out of town. So she was going to be traveling. And so I was home, obviously, with Wee Bear. And
we were not about to record a podcast where 15 minutes in...
Well, anything's possible, right? So there is always a chance that she would wake up and demand attention. And she does not handle sitting on my lap in front of a computer very well. Like, oh, I take it back. She loves it.
Yeah,
but she loves it because she bangs on things. Like, she loves the keyboard. And part of the problem is that I have this fancy pants mechanical Razer backlit keyboard. So the Razer Black Widow is kind of like a honeypot for my daughter. She loves to beat on it. It's just so entertaining.
Yep.
But yeah, so that was pretty good. We had a lot of fun. We had several fantastic adventures. And one of the adventures is going to be finished this weekend, which is that I bought a... Because, you know, sometimes we'll go to the park or whatever, and usually I just... either have her in a stroller or I carry her or I put her in I wear her on my back like C-3PO when Chewbacca's got them in Cloud City.
Sure.
So I like
is that how they market the back sling?
I don't think so. They probably should though. I think it would be a really great way to go.
Yeah.
But I think I was talking to my boss. My boss was like, do you have like one of those Red Ryder wagons? And I was like, no, but that's amazing. Like, I hadn't even thought of those. And it turns out that they have a wide variety of red radio flyer, rather, not Red Rider. Red Rider is the BB gun from A Christmas Story.
Yes.
What am I talking about? Did I mention I'm tired?
Yeah.
So tired.
Red Flyer wagons. I've seen those around.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So they used to be like these shallow metal rusty wagons that, you know, you got tetanus on while you're going to the post office. But
sure.
They also make them in different materials now, namely plastic. And
no.
Yeah, and I did.
No.
I did.
Oh, plastic. That's so terrible.
Calm down. So here's the reason I went with the plastic one, because they still have like the steel and they've got some wood ones also. But the plastic one, what's awesome about this one is that it has like a false floor. So you can pull up these seats and it kind of converts into like these two backrests. So you have like these little reclining sections, which is perfect for smaller babies. And it has like a little strap for safety.
I mean, this is no longer a radio flyer wagon.
It is. It says radio flyer right on it.
Yeah, well, yeah, sure.
And then it's plastic. So invariably when stuff gets real and there's like food or drink or who knows what being spilled, you just hose it out and you're done.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess maybe this is probably a step up from standard baby stroller.
Well, it's certainly a step up from standard radio flyer wagon. Like, my stroller is awesome though. I'm not even going to get into why my stroller is amazing, but
all right.
My stroller has like a zero turning radius. It's just awesome.
That is so exciting.
We spared no expense. Actually, that's not true. We spared plenty of expense. You can spend thousands of dollars on a stroller.
Oh, I'm sure. You get heated seats.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, that's,
That was very
sounds like an adventure.
But I still have to put it together.
Oh.
And I thought it'd be much simpler. And then
that's the adventure.
A garage. This weekend I'm gonna have to finish it because I haven't even gotten to it yet. But I'm very excited.
All right.
It's also got cup holders, which I know I mentioned, but say it again because
seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't think you heard it. They even make one with like a canopy.
Does it have a separate dome in the back for the adults?
Ooh, no, that's a good idea, though. See, here's the downside of those. When you have, like, a really fancy wagon like this, I'm afraid that, like, my daughter's going to start thinking of this as, like, her rickshaw, and then she's going to be looking for ways to, like, beat me to make me go faster. That should be, you know, really depressing. But I created these, but are you familiar with Irix at all?
Is this... I'm not, although I guess I'm about to be.
Well, Irix is the Unix operating system used by Silicon Graphics. And they
have
an environment called 4DWM, which is the 4D window manager and whatever. But anyways, it's a graphical interface that's a little dated by today's standards, for sure. But there were some sound effects in it that I've always loved. And I found an archive of those sound effects, and they're perfect for phone alerts. And so I converted them into M4R format for the iPhone and put them up on my website, and they're a total hoot.
So, as an aside here, the iOS 7 tones themselves are fantastic.
Oh, yes, they are.
The new tones.
I have no...
I
mean, I have a ton of tones on my phone, though. Like, first of all, I have a bunch of, like, ringtones that I've made from songs that I like or whatever. For example, No Scrubs. So, if a scrub is calling me, then I can set that to be their ringtone so that I know before I even look at the phone...
Sure.
...a scrub on the phone. And then there's... I've got, like, you know, a couple of Beatles tunes and... One of my favorite ones is Regina Spektor, the song Us. The opening loop on that is a piano thing, and it's like, and it loops perfectly. So it's like this really melodic. I like it a lot.
I'm gonna say African Thumb.
African Thumb is great.
And Xylo Pong are the two to go with here.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah. African Thumb is fantastic.
It sounds great. They're a lot of fun. And if you're kind of like a grizzly neckbeard like myself, it's a delightful trip down memory lane.
So here's my problem with alert tones, though, is that my phone is always on vibrate.
Kind of weird.
Well, I mean, why? Like, if I'm there are very few times when I actually want my phone to make noise.
I see. So here's my situation.
Yeah.
My off switch on my phone is for silent, and that means no vibrate.
Oh, sure. Mine too.
Okay, so you just have it.
Oh, I see. So no. I mean,
if I throw the switch on my phone, it's like the zero interruption switch, that's very important for me.
So then, what's the enabled state? The enabled state is
vibrate and noise. Yeah. So then, if I'm like at my desk, most of the time I've got it on silent, unless I've got a reason for wanting to be notified of stuff on the phone.
I just manage sort of the alerts that I'm going to care about will vibrate, and all other alerts just, you know, have sound turned off in Notification Center.
I don't like my phone buzzing on my desk while I'm working on stuff.
Yeah, well, it's in my pocket.
I don't like that at all.
I like that a lot. Less. No, I think that's kind of, it's a subtle indicator without like without being pressure, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh no, I don't mind the vibrate. I think it works fine. I don't like leaving it on and just that.
Yeah.
But anyways, you know, to each their own. I find personally I have problems focusing and staying on task, so having anything that's like, you know, pestering me or interrupting me is not good.
Yeah.
So then, you know, having nice tones though for when my phone is on, because I also generally will just like have my phone sitting out somewhere, and I might not notice a vibrate, but I sure as heck will hear it because I also have like a little thing on my bag. So like when I'm wearing my bag, I've got my phone's near my head. But yeah, so there's that. My tones are great, and I've also got for 30 Rock fans, I also have available the Devin Banks saying "Thanks, phone," which is a perfect reminder for meetings.
Oh yeah,
it's from the scene. It's the actor that plays Job on Arrested Development.
Sure.
He it's pretty great. And then I have I don't know. I think I had a couple of other ones too. Oh yeah, the dude that says that he has perfect pitch on YouTube and he's totally off key and playing notes on the piano and yelling them. I have him as a ringtone also.
Perfect.
Yeah, and then the other thing I've been doing was after the Last of Us incident where I lost everything, I get a hold of somebody on Twitter. See, here's my problem. I haven't talked about this very much yet because I haven't received any real resolution yet. I did get a hold of somebody from Naughty Dog who acknowledged that I existed.
Okay, and that's a first step.
Yeah, you're not lying. And as it happens, they're a QA engineer. The problem is that they're a QA engineer on the other side, so they don't do anything with the multiplayer stuff. But what they did was that they forwarded. Okay, I should say that they told me that they sent my information, including my little write up and a little video that I made that shows that I still had all these trophies and other stuff associated with the awards that I apparently no longer had. And they said that they sent it over and hopefully we'll hear something. And if they do, they'll let me know. And I haven't heard anything back. But my profile did stop resetting every day about a week and a half ago or 2 weeks.
Oh, I didn't remember that. It was
well, I had tested it yet. Yeah, because I didn't even bother playing after it was broken, right? So I was like frustrated and didn't come back. But then I noticed that like I would play a few rounds and then the next day I would go log in and it would thing again. I was like, you got to be kidding me. So it did stop doing that. And it's entirely possible that that was just a coincidence or that someone fixed something else. But I don't know what happened. But suffice to say, I've been playing enough now, again, that I'm almost back up to where I was before. And this time it's a little bit easier because I'm a little bit more aware of what I'm doing. But then this week, The Last of Us, they released three or four new multiplayer maps, and they're great. So I did get a chance to log some time on those this week.
I did. I actually put The Last of Us into my PlayStation 3.
Okay.
And I played the first hour and a half or so, 2 hours maybe.
Oh, good. Good, good, good.
Have not gotten into the multiplayer yet.
That's fine.
Yeah.
But did you not think that that was a great introduction to the game? Like, the game starts is beautiful.
Yes. I mean, it's beautiful on a graphical level and also just on a storytelling level.
Yeah.
It does a very good job. Almost, I mean, it is. It's not like a fun time, you know.
it's definitely. It's not easy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I shouldn't say that. I mean, it's not that the game is difficult. It's they.
Oh yeah, no. The game itself, like the mechanics are fun and you know challenging and rewarding. But the story is not something you want to play more than 2 hours at once.
Yeah. Well, unless you're Caspar, right?
What?
Well, I think she did the whole thing in single player in one stretch. Like, I think I remember getting a text message from her that she got it on the day it was released, and then I got a text later that she was like, you know, almost at the end. Like, she did. She basically played the whole thing in one stretch.
Yeah. Okay. I could not.
At least once.
Yeah. No. That'd be a little much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could do that. Well, actually, I know I couldn't. But yeah, it was pretty impressive. But I love that game, and I'm still hooked on the multiplayer. I think it's great. So that's been all sorts of fun. One of the things, since I'm not that great at it, I mean, don't get me wrong, I have a blast playing, but I spend a lot of time. There's like this mechanic where if you are seriously injured in the multiplayer, you end up like on your hands and knees crawling around, and then that means that the opposing side has an opportunity to do like an execution on you, or the people on your team can revive you if they get to you in time. So there's like a little timer that starts running, and I've come up with some very creative ways to use my corpse to my advantage to grief the opposing side. And I wrote a little article that kind of details some of that.
My favorite part of this article so far is the little call out at the top in red.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a really nice template you got there.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's tons of fun. It basically also details my how to eat a Molotov cocktail strategy and why it's something that I should consider from time to time.
The art and science of eating Molotov.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. It's pretty great. I had a weird thing happen this week with I have like a USB 3 disk array on my computer at home, and it swallowed my volume whole. I couldn't unlock my file vault volume, but I had a backup. So it wasn't really the end of the world or anything. But I did some research into this, and it turns out that USB 3 JBODs, like the one that I have, which is JBOD is just a box of disks. It's like a external enclosure that holds multiple drives, and then they all show up on your computer.
Okay.
So I had like rated them together and everything. And apparently there's like some weird thing that USB JBODs do where they actually emulate an older protocol on top of it. So it's not getting the most speed that you should be getting anyways. So I got to rethink this whole thing. I don't know how I managed to have completely missed this when I was setting it up originally, but that was my huge mistake. And I'll talk
about
my cable company another time, because I know you've got something later about you.
No, I want to hear about your cable company.
Mine's been awesome. I was on Quest for a while, and then I switched back to Mediacom after my protest. And they're still a little like weird, and I'm still not happy with them on a couple of areas. But the one thing I am really delighted with is that I'm getting 100 megabit down and 10 megabit up.
Wow.
And that's a pretty good connection. And my backups with Arc to Amazon take a lot less time. My,
sure.
You know, downloading or streaming anything is super fast. I have really zero complaints about the service from a performance standpoint.
So do you find I have something, I get something like 30-ish megabytes per second down.
Megabyte?
Megabit per second.
Okay.
Little b. Still certain web services, especially video services, have a lot of buffering issues, presumably because the peering point between Comcast and those services is not good.
It could be a lot simpler.
It could be a simpler problem, you're saying?
Yes.
As in?
Those
services themselves can't handle...
No. There's a, depending on how you are resolving DNS names, a lot of the content delivery networks that are used by video services like Netflix or Amazon, et cetera, there have been times where people that are using things like OpenDNS or Google DNS or one of the other global open resolvers will route you.
I am using Google DNS. Oh. And it's not necessarily the issue, but
yes,
that is.
But that has caused problems for people before.
Yeah, yeah.
And okay, not just anecdotally, like there's actually like you will get sent to weird places sometimes depending on that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, so I'm getting like the East Coast.
Potentially,
Netflix.
I mean,
yeah.
We're simplifying it, but yeah, there is a way that can happen. And so I think that the providers of those services, like I know OpenDNS has tried to or has acknowledged this or done some sort of some way to kind of accommodate this. But I don't know about all of them, and I don't know what those measures are exactly, and I don't remember offhand. But I know I've seen articles about this, and I have stuff saved. I'm not prepared to talk about it, but
yeah. Well, so now it's that'd be a tough choice, because then my options would be switch to Comcast DNS, continue to have subpar streaming.
Well, you don't necessarily have to use Comcast DNS. I mean, if it's something that's happening with the Google Resolver or another resolver, you could try another one of the global ones.
I could try OpenDNS.
Yeah, yeah. And the reason I like OpenDNS is that I like the analytics it lets me have. So I can actually get some information. And I can also do some fairly rudimentary, but still nonetheless some content filtering for things like malware and known injection sites for malicious files.
Yeah.
And I can do it all upstream without having to deal with it in my house. Because I already have to...
Wait, do you pay a monthly fee for that? Or is that... Wow. Huh.
You can. There's, enhanced information and better filtering that you get if you do.
I mean, yeah, I would have thought the features you just described would be the advanced features.
Well, no. It's now, keep in mind, this is like on a smaller scale. But, I mean, they do stuff for like, enterprise DNS also. And being able to do it for all users and things like that. So it's pretty slick. I do is I do have a DNS server in the house that just handles stuff for the local network, and then it caches things from OpenDNS. So it's kind of talking to OpenDNS to get answers for things.
Yeah.
But I'm resolving it all locally anyways.
Yeah. All right. Well, cool. That's a good thing to look into. I'll check on that.
It's worth a shot. And remember, when you change DNS, if it's like a browser thing, sometimes your browser will still be caching weirdly. So it's worth a bounce after you change it. You're doing like streaming in a browser.
Yeah. Okay.
And the reason I say that is because it used to be that on OS X, you could just kill the lookup D process, which acts as like a local resolver cache. And you would just kill that off and it would respawn automatically and you'd be back in business. But I don't know how to do that in newer versions of OS X because it doesn't use lookup D anymore, but I know it still caches. So there's something going on the OS and I just don't remember what it is.
All right.
So sometimes just rebooting it, which... there are people right now who are like just beating their heads because they hate that answer, but in a pinch, what else are you gonna do?
All right, so speaking of Comcast.
Yes, we were just talking about them.
I know. So I've got this lovely story. I have Comcast for internet, but I do not subscribe to Comcast television service. Previously, I could plug, TV into the cable of the wall, and I would get clear QAM, basically unencrypted channels, which were the equivalent channels to what's broadcast over the air, which is great and which makes sense, and which for a while there was an FCC requirement that cable companies carry those channels, unencrypted over the cable, right?
Yeah. Well, that's been my... I've been operating under that assumption. I didn't realize that it had changed.
Yeah. Well, so recently, I guess earlier this year, I think, I don't remember exactly, the rules changed, and now carriers are allowed to encrypt the free, over-the-air channels.
What possible rationale do they have for that?
It simplifies equipment costs and...
BS.
And, like, infrastructure...
BS.
...stuff. Yeah. So... Anyway, so the FCC allowed this on the condition
Just so we're clear, they're arguing that it's easier and better
to encrypt more if they have
to do more encryption. That is such a horse nonsense.
So the FCC is allowing this now on the condition that the cable companies provide free boxes for you to decrypt cable.
Whoopee-woo. Right? Now you get this complimentary piece of crap hanging off the back of your TV.
Yeah, I know. So there's that. However, additionally, as far as I can tell, there's no way to get one of those boxes from Comcast without being at least their lowest tier of television subscriber, as in their $10, these are the free channels tier. Their $10 basic cable.
I mean, these were the free channels. these, because now you, now they're all encrypted and you have to have a box.
Right. Yeah. And yeah. And so as far as I can tell, the only way to get the, what were previously the free by government mandate channels is to pay Comcast $10 a month. And I would imagine they waive the equipment fee. But yeah, I'm sure there's taxes and stuff on top of that. Anyway,
dumb business.
Right. So this led me to do exactly what Comcast wants us to lead you to do, which is, okay, well, maybe it's just time for me to get cable.
Yeah, maybe it's time.
Yeah, maybe it's time.
Because there's something that America needs. It's more TV.
More, yeah, exactly. There's more people spending more time watching hundreds of channels on cable.
Thank goodness the Kardashians are here.
Well, so here's – I mean there are a few specific reasons I want cable. And those reasons basically boil down to the Tour de France, which happens every summer, which you can watch online, but it's not the same level of coverage. The Olympics. And that's maybe it.
Yeah.
Oh, and Formula One races.
Now, are those carried on like network TV or?
Formula One is I maybe very occasionally, but normally it's just carried on speed.
So it's Kentucky,
and the Tour de France. Yes, and the Tour de France is carried on NBC Sports Network, something
okay.
like that.
All right.
So, formerly versus formerly Outdoor Living Network.
Sure.
Yeah. Anyway. So there's those, and then all, what?
I'm sorry. This business can't die soon enough. Like,
yeah,
it's so stupid, and like the whole model that like where I see Apple and Google are trying to push content providers and publishers basically into like being an app. Like, that's the only sustainable way forward, because this current mechanism that they have like painted themselves into a corner with is absolutely untenable. I do not understand how they have a plan for this to do anything other than fail.
So, okay. So here's, well, I would be willing to pay the following. I'd be willing to pay Comcast approximately $70 a month. Oh, HBO is the other thing. The ability to get HBO and access to HBO Go would be fantastic, and can't do that without a cable subscription.
Or with a cable subscription.
Or, yeah, all that. okay, so I would be willing to pay Comcast about $70 a month. I'd be willing to pay TiVo about $400 for a TiVo plus about $15 a month. I'd be willing to do all of this just for those like few, for the few cable use cases I have. I would have been totally willing to do all of this.
Yeah.
Except Comcast makes this incredibly difficult to do it the way I want to do it.
Of course they do.
Yeah. So finding a plan without a contract is actually fairly doable. They make it available on their website after some clicks.
That's kind of a non sequitur, though, because they're technically considered and classified as a utility company, so you're not bound by a contract with them anyway.
Oh, really? Even if you sign up for a 2-year
yeah.
thing?
Yeah, you can cancel anytime. They can't do anything about it. Because they're treated as a utility because they are like a municipal service like that, and they have like mm-hmm. these... the way, at least in my area, maybe it's because of the market that I'm in, but I know that in many places, the contract doesn't really hold you to anything, and they can't do anything to enforce it because it's considered a utility.
So here's my other requirement, and this is the one that actually is impossible for them to satisfy. I never want to see a Comcast cable box ever.
Oh.
Right? I do not ever want to even have one in my house for a minute.
I don't even want a Comcast employee in my house.
Right. Yes, that too, right? That's part of this, right? What I want them to do is I want to sign up for a new account. I want them to mail me 2 cable cards. I want to receive those cable cards, put them into my TiVo, and watch TV.
On 8 tuners.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, TiVo now does that. This is what I want to do. This is, as far as I can tell, not possible.
This is exactly what I think if you sat every consumer down
yeah.
and showed them the difference between what they currently get from the cable company versus yep. what is already available but just not permitted to happen, they yeah. would demand the other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because yep. so, that or my, where I think it's all going anyways, where it's kind of like a entirely... a la carte pay-per-view situation, which I would find vastly superior to this current
I kind of like the idea of, well, especially for sports, I like the idea of live TV and kind of having, like, having there be a stream available of something happening and being able to tune into it. I just like that that notion.
Sure, me too. So,
yeah.
But, I mean, there's no reason that couldn't be an unlock or something, you know, like... I mean, hell, yeah. Even like the on Apple TV during like the presidential debates, I had a Wall Street Journal app pop up on the dashboard, sure. And it was available for free. So they can already address that. And even the yeah. YouTube stuff, they do that stuff now.
Yeah, yeah. I think it'll all catch up. It's just so currently there's just this gap of, you know, again, like the Tour de France is the perfect example. There is an online service you can subscribe to, you know, while the tour is happening, where you can watch every stage of it. But it's not the same coverage, right? It's not the, I mean, it doesn't include the commercials, so I guess that's good, but it doesn't include all of the sort of side segments, all the before and after with the hosts.
And they don't have the Lance Armstrong shooting up cam.
They don't, yeah, they don't have the post, the interviews after. They have very limited interviews after.
Or the trial.
I was actually, as a random aside, I was at a bike shop the other day, and they had these they're like nutrition, like on bike snacks things, right? You know, and there was a bin of them, and half of the ones in the bin were heavily Lance Armstrong branded, and the other half were not at all.
Oh no.
So I can only imagine they're in the middle of refreshing their product line and taking Lance off of everything, and then this was seeing both sides of that. Anyway, yeah. So there's this list of, a fairly simple from Comcast's perspective. I mean, they don't need to send a guy out. They don't need to give me a box. I will pay them a significant amount of money per month, and all they need to do is mail me a couple cable cards, and that is not possible. So anyway, that's my Comcast story. Still kind of mulling it over of, yeah, like maybe I want to, I don't know, but I set my TV antenna, my over-the-air antenna, back up, and I'm getting pretty nice reception on it, so that's kind of been disincentivizing me from wanting to push further down the actually getting cable route.
I seriously wonder, like, what the, because you see, like, the as like even the telcos branch out into this, like Verizon is starting to push harder in this area too, and there's all this network neutrality back and forth and advocating one way or the other. Then you have like Aereo and other companies that are essentially filling data centers with antennas so they can stream over the air TV, which is just is amazing. And yeah. And you know, like, I don't know, there has to be, I think it's at the same point where my opinion on the mobile phone industry is that eventually one of the carriers is finally going to just have to say, all right, we're no longer in the business of pretending that we're a boutique hardware sales store. We're going to be a utility, and we're going to like just sling you the phone calls and the data, and that's it. And yeah. And whoever figures out how to do that will magically overnight have all the money in the world to have the best infrastructure, and it won't be a problem for them that they have all of these high bandwidth services. Like, they won't care because they'll be able to actually address it and design accordingly. But the way that they're doing it right now, where they're so top heavy, it just doesn't make any sense to me. And I think the cable companies are the same way. And like, I know people that work at Comcast, and like specifically like on the streaming side of the house, and that's a huge business for them. And like the on-demand pay-per-view stuff is huge. Sure. That is far more likely to survive any transition than any other part of that business. Like, I just do not get it. And like when they have these contract negotiations where you can handle this channel but not this one, and the way that they bundle stuff, so you have to buy, like, the reason I don't have cable TV right now is because I don't want to have any of that money go to a bunch of crap that I hate.
Sure.
I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me because I'm like, I can buy a package that has 100 channels, and 10 of them I'll actually watch, and 3 of them I actually loathe that they even exist.
don't you take some degree of satisfaction in the fact that a significant amount of that money is going to the creators of Storage Wars?
See, I don't know that it is.
That's on TV so much. They have to.
But
if you take it in like raw number of hours, like time spent broadcasting over cable, I think Storage Wars is probably like number one.
Well, that's because it is the finest and most entertaining program on television right now.
It really is.
But I think I don't know. Like I'm really curious about that, and I think if I were the producers of that show, I think I would rather be selling the episodes of the show than having the network do it. But I mean, on the other hand, you get more exposure and more potential viewers by having it just kind of in circulation like that. So yeah. I don't even know. But like, yeah. There's
well, I mean, from a user perspective, I just like the idea of an always on, endless stream of content. You know, I like the idea of being able to turn on, not the History Channel anymore. I don't know. Being able to turn on speed, I guess, is a good example, and just see, oh, okay, you know, there's auto racing, right, happening. You know, not having to think about which season do I want to watch, or which, you know, how many episodes do I want to buy, or, you know, which race do I want to watch, or whatever, just kind of, you know, turning on the stream, which is, you know, that's part of why TV works so well, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to think too much about it.
That's true.
Yeah. Anyway, all right, we've gone. I told you we could talk forever about.
Yeah, seriously.
About
now, when you're watching television, where do you sit? Yeah.
hell of a transition. Nicely done. So currently, I sit on an incredibly uncomfortable couch that I bought at IKEA.
When you're not on the trampoline.
When I'm not on the trampoline, I'm sitting on an incredibly uncomfortable couch that I bought at IKEA.
Okay. I don't think they make any other kind. Is it the uncomfortable?
Something like that. Yeah, I believe it was the spike in your butt. Something like that. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I am rectifying this situation. There is a very lovely store in San Francisco called Room and Board. It's part of a chain. The only one in the area is in San Francisco. And they have nice furniture, and they have non-pushy salespeople. They have a lot of couches and sectionals. So I went there and I sat on every couch, and I found the best one, and I ordered it, and it is going to be incredible, except it doesn't get here until mid-November.
Ouch. That's a long wait.
Yeah. I know. It's a really long
wait. When we moved here, we bought some new living room furniture, and that was a long few weeks, man.
So the one I ordered is called the Orson Sectional, and it is the only one that passed what I now consider to be the prime and only metric for judging a couch.
Okay. Sorry. Nothing is inappropriate.
It is something you can evaluate in the store, which is the head tilt or tilt your head back metric.
Oh.
Which is sit down on the couch. Now completely relax your neck muscles. Does your head tilt back a significant amount, or is it fully supported? If it's fully supported, that couch is a great couch. If it tilts back a significant amount, you've chosen the wrong
couch. Now, how much is significant?
Anything more than an inch or so.
An inch? So it's not a degree of inclination that you're watching.
If it tilts back to an uncomfortable...
Did you use the spirit level on your iPhone to evaluate this?
No, I did not.
Okay.
I mean you'll find most couches at least it, you know if I'm so I'm like I'm 5'11 ish if you're that height or so you will find most couch that height or taller you will find most couches do not do this, you know, most couches you end up tilting your head back significantly on them because there's no support at the head level.
Mm-hmm.
But a great couch you can just sink into with amazing head support.
I will say that the furniture that we did get, one of the main reasons that we got it was that it was oversized and it was, you know, just huge and super comfortable to sit on.
Yep.
The downside of this is that LL is shorter in stature. And when she sits on the couch, her feet don't touch the floor.
Okay, yeah, that could be a decision.
Yeah, so there's a consideration. Sometimes you have to find a compromise. Not me, of course, but sometimes you have to find a compromise.
Yes. All right, so yeah, so that's the couch. Rolling through it, I got a few other things to talk about. I am now consuming these things that are Vita Fusion gummy vitamins for adults. They're very specific about the fact they're for adults.
It's
a daily multivitamin, and it's really delicious.
Yeah, I've had them.
And I could care less about the vitamins. The problem is you can only eat two of them a day. Like, you're supposed to only eat two of them a day.
What's going to happen?
Yeah, I know. Well, what's going to happen, actually, is apparently very bad things, yeah, according to this article that I've linked in the show notes from The Atlantic.
I've heard some really, some people really like a good multivitamin. I'm not on a daily regimen, but I do take them when if I'm starting to feel really run down.
Let me just, there's a key quote in this article.
You gonna die.
Whatever the reason, the data are clear. High doses of vitamins and supplements increase the risk of heart disease and cancer. For this reason, not a single national or international organization responsible for the public's health recommends them.
Yep.
So, yeah. But they're really, really tasty.
Oh, they're delicious.
Yeah.
Now, on the other hand, I mean, and to be fair, they are more delicious than a gummy bear.
They actually are, because they're not as sugary.
Correct.
Yeah, it's pretty great. So,
I think.
And then my final...
The ones that... the prenatal vitamins that Liz was taking, because they have like folic acid, and that's supposed to be good for you, or good for your fetus. Those were also gummy ones, and they're the only ones that she like tolerated, because so many of the other ones are like so hard on the stomach for whatever reason. They even have gummy calcium, which is pretty good.
Wow. Okay, yeah. So my final thing is I've been playing a little bit of Pokemon X, which is the newest of the Pokemon.
That's an adults-only one, right?
It is. Yep. They've finally gone there.
So it's like you still train little monsters and they fight each other?
It is straight-up Pokemon.
Okay.
The one thing that's changed is it is now polygonal graphics, which are actually really nice. You know, a bunch of cell shading. One review apparently... claimed that it looks as good as the TV show, and I actually kind of see that. Like, it's, you know, the way the battles are animated, it's actually really
compare this TV to show. Like the cell shading thing on the Wind Waker, like, is it like that, or
it's not that level of style.
Aesthetic.
yes. but it's the way they do the When you enter a battle, and actually throughout the battle, the way they do the cuts and camera angles is actually pretty excellent. Like, they really thought about how they could make it, look more action like, or look more sort of action TV show like. Compared to previous Pokemon games where it's usually pretty flat view, you know, the camera angles don't change. They really did a great job making that stuff exciting. And the other thing is the music is just kick ass. It's all still pretty simple melodies and whatnot, but it's just some really great riffs on classic melodies that you may be familiar with from old Pokemon games, and then just some new jams that are total jams. So. Been enjoying that. All right, moving into the news, I guess. Although this looks like a tip. Did I lose?
No, I'm here.
I was expecting you to.
Yeah. I was distracted.
All right.
So when I was doing like some of my reorg, because I did a reinstallation of my operating system last week, and I decided that would be a great time to put a improved Time Machine backup on my machine at home. And I wanted to get a really big jumbo hard drive for it, because I was kind of tired of limping along with what I had, which was not sufficient. So I was constantly being really choosy on what I was backing up locally and what I wasn't, and I'd rather be more comprehensive. Because I already am pretty selective with what I send to Amazon with my ARC
backup system. But so I forgot all about this, but I was in the Best Buy and I was shopping around and I was hitting some of the boxes with the Amazon barcode scanner and realized that like their 3 terabyte drives were, you know, $20 cheaper on Amazon. And sure. I was like, oh, well, that'd be kind of nice. And I'm thinking to myself, like, that's kind of like my threshold where if something's like $20, that's kind of where I'm willing to put in the effort and wait.
I mean, it's 2 days.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. But I mean, if it's $20, that's where I'm like, okay, yeah, that's fine. I can just wait. But I remembered when I was in Boston and I bought the battery pack for my phone that Best Buy does a price match. Mm-hmm. So sure enough, I grabbed the hard drive and I went to the front of the store and I said, do you do price matching from other retailers? And they said, yes, we do. And I handed over my phone and there it was. And then they gave me the Amazon price for my hard drive. So that was, you know, I don't know that it's going to always work out in your favor. But in times where you want something very quickly and don't want to wait for it and the price difference is enough to make it worth your while, it's not a bad option.
So purely theoretically, or so they took your phone at its word.
Well, did they
cross reference it with their own Amazon
look? They did not do that, but they did look at what I was looking at and they confirmed the part and model numbers. Now, I will say that yes, if you were unscrupulous, you could open an Amazon store potentially and create your own listing for something that was, you know, $1.
Well, not only that, but I mean, you could create your own web page that
is... Well, no. I think that they do ensure that it's a retailer that they recognize and that it's a...
Well, no. I mean, you could create your
like
own
phishing site?
exact copy of the Amazon page with the price changed. And then open that on your phone.
I think so. Things like that tend to get investigated by fraud or by loss prevention departments and retailers. And what happens is,
like, if there's an unusually low price,
it's happening frequently, so that usually is where they start to get intrigued. There was a case recently where people were going into Walmart and returning console video games, and the scam they were using was that. They didn't open it, but because they re-shrink wrapped it and they were empty boxes. And they said that they didn't open them, but there was a problem because their kid got sick and threw up in the bag. So they were returning these puke-drenched video games that no one wanted to touch or open or anything. And then someone got curious because it kept happening. And it was a pretty awful illness that someone was dealing with if it was constantly happening. And they realized that they were getting scammed, and then they still had the footage and they were able to find out who it was and arrest them. But so I think in a case where it's clearly being manipulated like that, that they are not above or incapable of investigating and prosecuting. I think especially like a large chain like that. So I hope that it's not something that they end up having to worry about, because it's a really convenient thing that they're offering. And it does get me in the store more often, because I got to tell you, like, there's a lot of times where I just don't even bother.
I mean, at that point, like, what's the advantage of Amazon? I mean, you know, if you get the same price, I mean, you know, and if you want it that
first
day,
of all, Amazon anyway. Stocks a lot more things than Best Buy.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, if there's a specific item that you need to buy, and you know it's at Best Buy.
Well, if you know it's there and there's even parity and you are paying sales tax anyways and you don't have Amazon Prime, sure. There's a, you know, it's less of a motivator. However, you know, there's a lot of stuff.
I'm not saying I'm going to go start buying everything at Best Buy.
Yes, exactly. It's a convenience thing. Like, there's so many things that I don't want to go out and get. Like, for me, this is why I get so pissed off when retailers like Target and Best Buy and not that I shop there, but Sears does this too, where they have like these open marketplaces where other people can sell stuff. That is infuriating to me, because when I am going to Best Buy or Target's website, I'm going to see what Best Buy and Target have. And in fact, I'm going straight to the store locator and if they have it in stock. I do not care if I can buy something from them and have it shipped to me. I can do that already on my own.
Sure.
And I can do it better than they can, because I can do it from Amazon. So I've got, like, you know, the A side with Amazon, and then I've got the B side that I'm gonna, I'm not gonna buy anything from Joe's house of hard drives. Like, it's just not going to happen. So I get really mad when they do that because it screws up the website. It makes it harder to use. And I get bad results because I see something and I'm like, oh, thank goodness they do have it. And then I realize, like, halfway down the listing that it's, you know, coming to me from somewhere else. So that's just not, I'm not into it.
All right. Let's see. What else is, oh, yeah, this is whatever you added last minute here. So bring us up to speed on this.
Oh,
Adobe's compromise.
I don't even know where to begin with this. And I haven't caught up on the story from the last week, but there was a pretty large compromise at Adobe. And some of the things that concern me about this, aside from the fact that pretty much every single one of their usernames was compromised. So every Adobe account was getting a notification sent out to a password change and all that.
I didn't even know I had an Adobe account.
I found out that I had three. And they got them all. And one of the things that pissed me off about this, first of all, I hate Adobe. So why do I have three accounts? I have no idea. I know one of them was when I bought Lightroom. And then the other ones, who knows? So here's the thing. First of all, their notice says that they believe that the attackers made off with encrypted credit card data. And they keep saying that it was encrypted. And first of all, that's irrelevant and meaningless because they don't say how it was encrypted. So for all we know, it's like an RC4 hash an RC4 algorithm that can be cracked in 30 seconds, and who cares? But the other thing is that no merchant is supposed to retain credit cards in a database of any kind for any reason. Like, that's a violation of PCI DSS. And that's
isn't there a level of that certification that lets you?
No. Nobody is allowed to retain a credit card number. Period. The only way that you can is if the system or the process that does it is not in PCI scope. And if you're a merchant like Adobe that sells services and uses the Adobe account system as your ID to log into that system, for example, Creative Cloud or anything else that they sell on their website, I do not know how that would not be in scope for their PCI assessment, which apparently they passed. So I'm really curious to see what happens, because my initial reaction is that it's possible that their auditor just was terrible and did a bad job. It's possible that they withheld that information or lied, or it's also possible that they didn't even know that they were storing it, which, you know, you'd think is not possible, but it happens because the people that write applications aren't necessarily the people that run the service and would be able to answer that question authoritatively. But no, they are not allowed to retain credit card information on file. And no merchant does that is doing what they're supposed to be doing as required by law. What they can do is they can store a tokenized version of it that will only decrypt one way when they submit for a payment.
Oh, sure. So
that's the way that whole process works. And like, that was revolutionary for that industry, because they no longer needed merchants to retain that information or do anything with it. They were able to work with a payment processing company that could just take that information, tokenize it, and hand them back the token. And that's a much safer way to do it. And it's also possible that Adobe was doing that, but for whatever reason was still holding on to the original information. I for the life of me, I don't know what happened there.
So is it possible that the statement they released publicly was all, maybe they meant they were holding the, you know, intermediary key, not the numbers themselves?
If I was, it is possible, but it's not likely, because if I am a multi-billion-dollar publicly traded company, I want to do as much as possible to instill confidence that everything's going to be okay. And that would include things like saying, no credit card numbers or no financial information is directly stored by Adobe. We use a tokenized blah, 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 blah. And there's a way that they could have phrased this that would explain that, but they didn't. They said that they had it encrypted, which is, I don't know. So on the one hand, I'm willing to concede that it's entirely possible, but I would think that part of their response would have wanted to mention that it was not their credit card information rather than saying it was. Because what they released was a statement that says they took an encrypted copy of your credit card number and, you know, you're going to be in trouble. Now, the worst part about this, or the funniest, depending on how big of a troll you are, is that the Adobe press release directs you, so if you've got a problem with identity theft or you want to report an instance of fraud, to contact the Federal Trade Commission, and they give you a link to the website that was defunct because of the government shutdown. So
that is perfect. Wow. Yeah.
So in the middle of all of that, they also had this link for people to report fraud and theft that was going nowhere.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Huh. Excellent. All right. Well, let's see. What else have we got? You had identified... Oh, yeah, I didn't know about this at all, but apparently, speaking of compromises, some Android... popular Android library is in trouble.
Yeah, there's a library that a lot of software developers use for displaying advertisements and some other stuff in their applications. And I think that it's been revealed now what it is, but the sources that I trust have not revealed the name of it or hadn't yet when I was preparing these notes. But
that is to prevent people
actively
from
exploiting
and looking into.
Although everyone clearly is anyways. Like once you release a story like this, the clock's ticking, right?
Sure.
But apparently, this library that so many of these applications use to facilitate that has some very large vulnerabilities in it. So it's fairly trivial for a malicious person to attack that particular library and get the software to do other things like turn the camera on, take pictures, send messages, read messages, get your two-factor tokens, read the contents of anything on your device, et cetera, et cetera. So that's a huge, huge, huge problem. I don't know, and this is my ignorance of the way that like the Play Store and other Android markets work in terms of like code review and things like that. So I don't even know if it's possible for them to like, if that was disclosed.
Audit.
Yeah, or I'm sure they can audit for that library because it's got to be just a simple matter of even looking at the binaries and pulling for certain strings, but I don't know if that's allowed in their terms of use or whatever, so I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know how it works
but,
either.
Suffice to say that the issue was reported and supposedly was being addressed, but really you're still going to be relying on these software developers to use the newer version of the library. So there's going to be this is going to be a problem for a very long time, I think. Not to, you know, whip out my thing and urinate all over Android, but this is a really big deal, and it's unlikely that it's ever going to go away entirely. So hopefully people will upgrade. And I mean, I think in general, developers want to use current libraries on their software, especially if it introduces a vulnerability into their product. But there's also, I know, a lot of like small hobbyist developers like Alan Joyce who has untouched applications on the App Store.
Yeah, but then not using any libraries. So I know.
But just saying, you know, there are some like little ad hoc development efforts that get abandoned and people still use. So who knows? I'm a little concerned about it, though. And it's not the first and it isn't the last, but it's just it's a little frustrating. Now, that's...
We're coming up on an hour here, but we probably have time for one more topic. You want to roll through the T-Mobile stuff and then call it?
I think we should probably talk about T-Mobile in more depth. I will say I'll do some TV stuff.
Okay. Let's roll the TV and we'll talk about T-Mobile.
Do you watch Breaking Bad?
I do.
So did you see the finale?
Sure, I did. Not anymore. I don't.
Did you see the finale?
And after that, I'm never going to watch that show.
Are you serious?
Well, yeah, because it's...
Well, I know, but... okay, so you would never...
I thought it was... It was what it needed to be.
I thought it was a great finale.
I liked that it was... that it didn't try and pull some... Everything was a lie! Or, like, you know... like, some big revelation at the last minute. You know, it didn't try any of that.
I thought it was poetic, and I thought it was satisfying... And I thought it was everything it needed to be. I was not at all disappointed. Yeah. It was not like watching the last episode of The Sopranos.
That's exactly what I was going to compare it to. I haven't actually seen the last episode of The Sopranos, but it sounds like this was the complete opposite.
In some ways, yeah. And then, this is such a great show. And Elizabeth, she had not been watching from the beginning. Breaking Bad is a show that I wasn't watching when it first came out. John Duxta, a friend of the show, he suggested that I watch it like a few years ago, and it was after the first season had ended. So I was able to watch that, and the first episode or two of it, I was kind of on the fence, but then I very quickly was absolutely on board. And it's just phenomenally written, so well cast. The whole show is just brilliant, and it's an emotional roller coaster, especially if you're my wife and you watch it all like in the span of a month. So she started at the very beginning, and she watched, and she pointed out to me, and I had never even really realized this, that that entire show takes place in a year.
And that's a remarkable
timeline.
Yeah,
for everything that happens and the way that the character is, like, that is a crazy year. It just blows me away how fresh all of that is. Like, there are these large gaps, especially when they were doing the half seasons. So there's like, it's very easy to lose your scope.
Well, and given how much the characters change over the course of the show, you know, it seems almost like they're, you know, gaining, or they're at a different point in their lives by the end of the show, pretty dramatically. So it seems like they're years older when, in fact, it hasn't been that long.
American Horror Story Season 3 has begun. Two episodes have aired so far. Fantastic show. The cast is always, well, not the full cast, but the primary characters on the show are always played by the same people, but they have different roles every season. And there's a different theme and a different everything every season. So like the first season of American Horror Story takes place in this house in California, and it was fantastic. The second season takes place in an asylum, with, you know, it's same cast members with different roles. And then the third season now is called The Coven, or just called Coven, and it's about a group of witches that are living in New Orleans or somewhere in Louisiana. And just a fantastic show. And not everyone's gonna like it. It's hard not to like it this season, though. It's got some pretty cool stuff going on. It's always a little, it's more on the thriller side. The first season was definitely more grisly. It doesn't try to really do that. It's definitely playing around with horror and what that means. It's definitely more psychological, the last two seasons so far, but, season 3 is looking pretty good, and I'm really happy to see that show back, too. The one I'm not happy about is How I Met Your Mother. That show sucks. It's overrated, and it should have been over 4 years ago.
I didn't get the sense it was overrated. I thought
it was a brilliant show, or it was a brilliant show. And then it just basically got into this contest to see how long they could drag it out, and it shows.
Oh, that's the other thing about Breaking Bad, is the fact that they ended it when they did rather than...
Oh, God.
Yeah. I mean, you know, rather than dragging it out.
In all seriousness, How I Met Your Mother, I love that show. I loved that show. And I still find earlier seasons of that show just fantastic and hilarious. And again, it's a casting and a writing thing. What's her name? Lily, played by, she was on Buffy. Allison Hannigan. She is a fantastic actor, and there are so many things about her that I love on this show and the way that she does that character. But seriously, like, they've blown it. They completely missed their window for that to be executed well, and they finally introduced kind of the character that's the mother, and I just don't care anymore. And I really wanted to like it this season because it's going to be the last one, but it's just not holding my attention at all.
All right.
Have you been watching?
So don't watch that.
I mean, do what you got to do, but you're wasting your time.
Yeah. All right. Well, then that will do it for this episode of the Hell Yeah Show. If you want to email us, show@hellyeah.com or online at show.hellyeah.com.
Find us on the Twitter machine, twitter.com/hellyeahshow. Send a tweet to @hellyeahshow. You can also find us on app.net, app.net/hellyeah. So you can send a post to @hellyeah, not Hell Yeah Show.
Does anyone actually send us posts on app?
Yes.
Wow. All right.
Canada Brad, who I'm not supposed to call Canada Brad. What am I? I need to make a note because I always forget what I'm supposed to be calling him now. But he had a very special request that I promptly ignored and came up with an alternative. But I love our neighbors to the north. Well, so keep listening.
Yes. Yeah. Very. Yeah. Well, all right. Well, to all of you out there and to Canada Brad.
How many times has Canada shut down due to political gamesmanship? I think the count is zero. So they're doing something better than our banana republic.
All right. Well, that'll do it. I will see you in about 2 weeks. We'll be right back.